Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Here we are, Friday together, and with our listening audience out there, and a beautiful day in Vancouver.
Turkey burps and hangovers for our American friends who just celebrated Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's... Their harvests come in earlier than ours, so you think they'd have a Thanksgiving earlier. But somehow, when they made it law, it took a long time to get through legislation. So that's why it ended up being so late. So.
And Canada celebrated Thanksgiving in October, 60 years before the U.S. started.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Very good.
They're
yeah.
just copying us.
Uh-huh.
Bob, there's lots of noise about commodities. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening.
Oh, we can call them perma bulls in commodities. And they are fully aware that the Fed is evil. It's going to depreciate the currency and commodities are going to go up forever. And we're heading for a great commodity super cycle boom. But they don't do any research. It's a recipe, and they don't understand that when you're in an era of financial innovation, that the Fed ease and money goes into inflation in financial assets, like stocks and bonds. And then there's more to it, Jim, because you've got a recurring pattern out there where, like in 1929, you had a great global boom in commodities completed in 1920, and it crashed. And then a decade later, you had the bubble completed in September 1929. And something similar, the previous bubble completed in 1873, and the high for commodities then was 1863 or 1864 with the Civil War. So what these commodities peaks are is like about twice a century, you get a huge commodity boom. And then a decade later, you get a huge boom in financial assets. And then you get deflation in most asset prices. So this one worked out. We had the 2008 high for commodities. And now within that, when it was running, I looked at the base metal prices, you know, copper, lead, zinc, and deflated them by the producer price index. So there were two things that jumped out at you. One, it was the highest in 100 years. The other was that the jump in prices with that boom in 2008 was about twice the best in a 100-year chart. So, hey, now, is that a fabulous bull market for commodities? Biggest in 100 years. And then that was, they backed off, and then it was tested in 2011, and it didn't get as far. So anyways, the guys who are calling for a super cycle boom in commodities didn't recognize that it had happened in 2008. They haven't a clue that a decade later, when you've had the financial bubble, that you go into a contraction where there are pricing pressure on, you know, commodity prices, producer prices, wholesale prices, and eventually inflation at the consumer level will get down to close to zero. So this is the way it worked. This is the sixth time for the pattern. And Jim, within this, there are four main features that do what they do at the end of a great financial bubble. One is that gold's real price goes down, and then it goes up. This has happened. The other is that copper goes the other way, where in our bubble, the real price of copper went up, and then it's been going down, along with other base metals, but just focus on copper. The third item is that real long interest rates go up, and the whole world is complaining about high interest rates. And we can say that the real rate is up by about 2 percentage points. And on my historical work, the typical increase with the disaster has been in the order of 10 percentage points. Could you imagine, Jim, when we get out there at some time? So there's the third point. Now, the fourth point, a feature of the transition to a lengthy post-bubble contraction, has been that the senior currency firms up. And the DX is the senior currency. And the whole world is complaining about the U.S. dollar when it's up, you know, being too, like a year ago in October, it was up to 114 on a perceived crisis then. And not so much crisis now, but on the next crisis, I'd fully expect the DX to get up to that 114 level. So, and, you know, Jim, it's fascinating. You have had the Bank of England since 1694. And whenever you get the end of a bubble, you get a long contraction. And that even the Bank of England couldn't do anything about it. So you've got in 1873, England was then the senior economy. And Walter Bagehot, who was the very highly esteemed editor of The Economist magazine, published a book on the history of financial markets. But in this, he said that a recession is sort of a neuralgia, and that by proper action and easing credit conditions, the Bank of England can prevent them. So and by 1880, British economists wrote and started calling the lengthy contraction as the Great Depression. And in also, of course, New York enjoyed the bubble in 1873, when the Herald newspaper editorialized that the U.S. was in better shape than England because U.S. did not have a central bank that would be constrained by gold. Instead, it had the Treasury system, whereby the Treasury could issue endless amounts of credit to prevent something bad from happening. Well, it's got the same. It was a global Great Depression that ran until 1895. So all of this stuff is, you know, it's all. One of the best little paragraphs on the effectiveness of a central bank was published by the very fine newspaper Barron's in July 1932, which was, you know, the first low of the of that disastrous depression. And the editorial pointed out that every anti-deflationary measure taken by the Federal Reserve System is seen not to be working. And what was the anti-deflationary measures? They were buying bonds out of the market for years, and it didn't do anything about the that horrible depression. So this is the whole point to be made, is that central bankers are just along for the ride. And then on our four main indicators, we are generally on the path to a severe contraction. I think we're just early stages recession U.S. now. Oh, add on, Jim, that outside of all this great historical stuff is near historical stuff, and that is the yield curve, which is the difference between long and short rates. As we've been talking, in March, it inverted, whereby short rates got higher than long rates. And I got charts on that one back to the 1860s. And every time the U.S. curve inverts, you end up with a recession. Inevitable. You know, you can't really call when, but it's inevitable, and there are signs appearing. So it's not a good place for investors to be. But what it is doing, Jim, is setting up the early stages of a multi-year bull market for the gold sector. And this doesn't need gold going up or down. I base it on the real price of gold, it deflated by CPI, or even better, by the commodity index. And when the commodity prices are falling relative to the bullion price, it represents their mining costs going down, in which case it doesn't matter what the price of gold is, it's the relative thing, and they make more money. And this is where, in every post-bubble depression, the deflation of everything relative to gold makes gold very profitable. And it's Mother Nature's way of saying, hey, the only way we can get liquidity back in the system after all the silly games in bonds is to raise the real price of gold. Miners go to work, and it flows into the banking system and starts to make things a little more liquidity. It's really a clever way it works.
Bob, what's going on with gold?
Well, what we're looking at here is that the real price relative to commodities and relative to crude oil. Now, let's keep in mind that in mining, some 60% of mining costs are energy-related. So if you got crude oil falling relative to gold, and it really is, your operating margins are improving, so it makes gold more profitable. So we don't look for the old recipe of dollar down, gold up, gold stocks up. That's speculating in foreign exchange fluctuations. What we look for now is prices of things falling relative to gold, and that increases profit margins. And then that builds a stream of increasing earnings. And when you buy a sector on increasing earnings, you're investing, aren't you? So anyways, that's the outlook. So we were looking for a major low in gold stocks last October, which we got. And this is now early stages of what could be a multi-year bull market for gold stocks. Now, that would imply that gold stocks are going up. But there's more to it, Jim, because quite likely the gold stocks will outperform the S&P. So then when equity fund managers who may not normally position gold or even look at them, if they see gold stocks going up relative to the S&P for maybe a couple of quarters, hey, they got to get into the hot action. So this gets very profound out there, and there's going to be some swings from overdone to underdone, you know, usual technical stuff. But essentially, we are at early stages of a multi-year bull market for gold stocks. And then there will be, with this favorable environment, there'll be more money going into exploration, and there could be some major discoveries that the whole world will get excited about and play. So, yeah, Jim, I really like the gold sector.
We'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught Bob's eye right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Some of the headlines that we're going to take a look at today. Markets rise after Federal Reserve hits pause button on rate hikes.
Yeah. Yeah, we haven't quite got the observation that interest rates are going to, short rates are going to go down, and that'll be good for the stock market. Because I collected that headline from ages ago, where it was September 2007, going into that peak, when a leading Wall Street pundit saw that short rates were going down, and that this would be Fed cuts, and it would be good for the market. But I can show you over generations where short rates, like T-bills, go up in yield with a boom, and then they go down in yield with a bust. So here was this guy, Harris Trust or something like that, who was convinced in September 2007 that interest rates going, short rates going down and Fed cuts would drive the stock market up. And I've got charts here, Jim, to show you that it goes the other way. Interest rates go down, short rates go down with the stock market, and at sometimes the fastest drops in the stock market have been associated with the fastest drops in T-bill rates. So, you know, it's an amazing world out there. So anyways, the interest rate market, let's do some more headlines.
Wall Street sees a soft landing next year after getting everything wrong this year. After all, I think they expected a recession, didn't they?
Well, yeah, whatever. I love the line because it pointed out what they're looking at now. They got everything wrong last year. So, and then we got another headline about Country Garden in China.
Yes, China outs Country Garden on draft list of builders to support. In other words, their largest real estate company, which is in deep doo-doo, is going to stay there without government help.
They're not, well, of course, they can't do anything anyways. And then the next headline about office landlords, I thought was a bit sad.
Yes, office landlords can't get loans anymore. Look at WeWork went bankrupt.
Most investors and builders and always work off of borrowed money, but hey, they're not getting any more now.
Private equity's new financial engineering brings risk.
Yeah.
What's the deal there?
I love the term financial engineering.
Yeah.
Where you're structuring all kinds of complicated deals and derivatives and interest rate things. And it's the point of that headline, or including that headline, was financial engineering. I just love it.
So they're doing squiggly little things in the background that
all
we don't know
of
anything
magic,
about.
Yes.
Yes. And Bob, what usually happens when you rely on magic to run your finances?
All of a sudden, people lose the illusion. Yep.
Headline from the Financial Times: hedge fund herding is worse than ever. How do you herd hedge funds? Is it like herding cats?
Hedge means you're you're positioned long and short, so you're kind of balanced and looking for improving rates of return. But the headline points out that the hedge funds go one way altogether, and then they go get burned, and then they go one way altogether the other way and get burned going that way. So, I really like that headline.
From the Wall Street Journal, Fed wants more evidence before changing rate stance. I guess they want more evidence that inflation is receding.
Did it yesterday. The 6-month T-bill had its high in August, and it is in a downtrend. So at some point, the Fed's going to get off its wicket and follow the market and lower rates. And same thing happened in 1929. The T-bill rate reached its high in May and June of 1929. The Fed raised rates of all things in August. And then finally, at the end of October, they cut the rates, following the lead from the T-bill market rates of interest. So, yeah, the Fed is merely there for the ride.
Headline from Financial Times, investors pour cash into U.S. corporate debt, bet Fed rates have peaked.
Yeah, and there's the problem. The guess is right on that the Fed rates have peaked and the short rates are going to go down. But junk, lower-grade bonds are just going to get trashed, something awful. And even right out to treasuries, long-dated treasuries, they're just going to be a trading item. Because as I mentioned, one of the severe problems in the post-bubble world is rising real long rates. So you don't go investing in long treasuries. They're for trading, and that's that.
Notice that the interest rate long-term versus short-term still inverted.
Oh, yeah. No, it's the Jim, it's just a brief event when whoosh, it goes up to inversion, and that is indelible. That's clocked. It's recorded. It's there. And then it just goes the other way, and it all kind of relaxes. But the whole thing was that it is such an acute a financial event when short rates get longer and get higher than long rates.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you on yet another sunny day in Vancouver.
Although it's supposed to be Black Friday.
Good one.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.